Thursday, September 12th, 2013, 2 p.m. This is Mario Lawson. Welcome to Inside the Brahma Box, the show that focuses on the lives and the culture between the 101, the 118, the 405, and Topanga Canyon Boulevard, Highway 27. Today, we're here with Beth Benne, RN, PHN, MA. She is the Director of Student Health Services, Student Health Center here at Pierce College, as well as a major advocate for personal health in the Brahma community. Welcome, Beth.
Welcome. I mean, thank you.
Well, thank you for coming. I just wanted to start, you know, I've read a lot of stuff about you, and I was very impressed. No, I'm not supposed to, you know, be impressed as I was, but I was excited to talk to someone in the healthcare community who is close to us, so kind, you know, when she speaks to us, and as well has so much experience. But I wanted to know when you started, when you wanted to start and join the nurse, join the healthcare profession.
Oh, gosh. I was a kid. I was hospitalized and fell in love with the people who were taking care of me. So I think that was the start of it. And then I had some significant role models, close family friends, a Navy nurse who was a commander of the nurses at Bethesda. So she was a significant influence in my life in choosing medicine. So, and then it was something I've always wanted to do. It was just part of me.
Wow. So I was reading something about you being in college, and then you graduated college and went right into oncology.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that experience. It was a scary time. Can you tell us about that time and why you chose oncology?
You know, as a nurse in nursing school, mm-hmm. I found my nursing rotations a practice of what I didn't want to be. Don't want to do pediatrics, don't want to do seniors, don't want to do psychiatric, and I was becoming nervous. And then my junior year, I did a medical surgical rotation on a medical oncology floor. And back then, this is in 1980, people were hospitalized every month for their chemotherapy. And so over the course of my three-month quarter, my time there, I got to see them several times. They would come in every 3 to 4 weeks, and I got to know them. And I fell in love with it. So when I was interviewing on my senior break for jobs up in L.A., the Huntington in Pasadena offered me a job on a medical oncology floor, and I took it.
Now, what was the Huntington?
The Huntington, it is the Huntington Hospital.
Okay.
It does sound like a hotel, doesn't it? Well, yeah, it's a beautiful hotel. I mean, no, it's a beautiful hospital. Sorry. It's a wonderful hospital, but that's where I first worked. I worked there for the first 8 years after I graduated. And they hired me onto a medical oncology floor. It was everything I wanted to be as a nurse. It was a primary nursing unit. I was solely responsible for my 5, 6, or 7 patients every night. And I did everything for them, from there, starting their IVs, drawing their blood, administering their chemotherapy, and then I treated their families.
Wow.
And they all died. So they all died.
So there's got to be a – I know – I've talked to people who have been in health, in caregiving, and, you know, you were saying that you treated the patients and you treated their families.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some kind of social help there? I'm trying to understand how you treated the families.
Well, first of all, I got as much back as I gave. So people used to say, how can you work with terminally ill patients? And to me, it was a gift. They were giving me a gift. They taught me how to deal with a very difficult part of life, which is the end of it. And to this day, I rehash these lessons on a daily basis. You also have to redefine your successes. So for us, a success wasn't a cure. For us, a success was getting somebody to the point that they were ready to go and getting the family ready to a point that they were ready to let go and help that transition to that other part of life, whatever your beliefs are, in a better way, in a more healthier way. And that was our successes. So it was just a wonderful experience all around. I will have to say I was young. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a heavy-duty relationship that was taking my time. So I could afford to invest the time and the emotion in these people who so badly needed it. And they invested in me. So it was just it was really neat. It was a wonderful time. I would have a hard time going back to hospital nursing and not doing medical oncology.
It sounds wonderful. I mean, the experience must have been so rewarding at the same time.
Yep.
Wow. Let's jump to 1981.
Okay.
All right. And this is an interesting time. I know I jumped here real fast, but you're graduate. Like I said, you graduated college before, and the first cases of AIDS were just reported that spring.
Mm-hmm.
How did this epidemic actually affect your life?
I will never forget what it was like to watch one of my leukemics die of HIV and not leukemia. So we got her into remission. We got her into remission. And she ends up dying 2 years later of AIDS because of one of the hundreds of units of blood and platelets that we used to hang. As I transitioned out of medical oncology and into a blood banking, I moved into, for whatever reason, I was interested in the blood and the blood products. And I don't like vampire movies either. But the HIV people, the AIDS people, there really wasn't a distinction at that point in time. It was AIDS. People didn't really come to the forefront until they were diagnosed with the full-blown disease. It's such a different story now.
So it was always AIDS. They just kept saying AIDS every time.
Yeah, pretty much. But I remember, you're probably too young, but Starsky and Hutch.
Starsky and Hutch, I remember them.
Okay, Paul Michael Glaser.
I used to love jumping across the car.
And Paul Michael Glaser, right?
Yeah,
His wife and daughter died of HIV, AIDS. She was given a transfusion after the birth of her daughter.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they didn't. The baby didn't last very long at all. I mean, that would be interesting research. I don't remember how long. But these were people who were real. And it wasn't, the panic was such. In working in the blood bank, we used to have the word autologous became a word. Autologous means somebody who's going to donate blood for themselves. So we would have older folks who were having bone surgery, having knees replaced and hips replaced, and they would come into the blood bank and they wanted to donate their own blood for their surgery because they didn't trust the blood supply because it wasn't being tested. We didn't start testing until 1985, testing our blood supply. And so they were so worried about it. And these folks had no business donating. They completely altered the standards of how low their red cell count could be before we could donate blood, and it was different. And sometimes they were simply too weak and too anemic to donate blood for themselves. So I remember this one little old lady sitting in our waiting room, and a young man came in to donate blood. He was just a community donor. And she looked at him and asked him what his blood type was, and he told her, and she begged him to donate for her because she had just been told she was too anemic, she couldn't donate. And it was so scary. The world was so panicked at that point in time. And there was such discrimination. I remember the discrimination. It was so horrible. Yet there was so much, people weren't being logical. This woman was not being logical. She didn't know this gentleman from Adam. Yet because she'd seen him, she wanted his blood, not some strange blood somebody that she hadn't seen from the blood bank. And she didn't quite get the incongruity of it all. But that was the panic. That was the nature of the beast. And seeing the progress over the years is wonderful. Knowing that a diagnosis of an HIV positive status is not a death sentence any longer, it's wonderful. But it is still, it can be shattering. Having a diagnosis of HIV, it can be absolutely shattering. I will never forget. I had an AIDS patient who came in for an outpatient blood transfusion. So that was when I'm at the bank. They come in to have their blood drawn. I drew the blood. I walked through the lab to take the blood before the transfusion. So mm-hmm. He comes in the day before. They type and cross match. They match the blood up for him. Right. I took his tubes. I tripped as I went over the door jam into the lab. I fell, the blood went flying, and it shattered. This guy has no veins. He's a real tough stick, so I had to draw him. And I had to call him back, and I had to tell him that he had to come back to me, so I could draw his blood again. I felt so bad. His greatest concern was for my health and my safety. Did it hit you? Are you okay? Is everything all right? Did anybody else get hurt?
That's the difference about patients that people don't understand. I think a lot of people see the patients as enemy number one,
They see the disease. They don't see the patient.
Exactly.
They don't see the human being who happens to be a patient.
Exactly.
And that's probably one of the reasons why I stay in nursing at this level where I'm seeing patients. And that's one of the great things about my job. While I might run the health center, half of the time I'm the nurse and I'm dealing with the patients. And that's what I really love.
Well, that's what leads me to this next statement, because I read an interview in POZ.com. And it stated something about you had a student here who had a person from out of town who was across seas. I'm trying to remember the actual interview. Let me see if I have it written down here. Oh, yeah. It was in 2008 on POZ.com, and it said that she spoke to a student who had a family member from overseas who was HIV positive. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about that story, because it reminds me of those moments of when people see the disease and not the...
I don't remember the story. What did I say?
Well, it said something to the fact that the student was staying with the family member and the family member was kind of uncomfortable.
Oh, okay. You know,
when
I don't mean it in a bad way, but ignorance is a lack of understanding.
Yes.
And if I can educate, then the understanding will develop, because an educated person understands the nature of the beast of whatever disease it might be. I mean, we could be talking about tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is, I could be contaminating you with tuberculosis because we're sharing this space for an extended period of time. And I mean, I could be sharing something else that's airborne.
Exactly.
And the fact that you can touch and you can hug and you can love somebody who's HIV, if you do it smartly, you can do it with relative little risk, and it's an educated, calculated risk. Life is a calculated risk, right? So again, you have to educate yourself before you can make a decision. And if I can help alleviate the ignorance to lead to the increased understanding, the acceptance, and the love that I think we all need, whether we're struggling with a life-threatening illness or whether we're struggling to make it through the next day at school and work, then it'll be a better place.
Well, that leads me to your involvement in HIV Awareness Week. Let's talk about that a little bit. And I really want to talk about that, because I think it's important for the students to know a little bit more about HIV and AIDS. I think right now a lot of students have unprotected sex and don't think about it because I read something.
Really?
I read something that you said you see a lot of cases of pregnant students.
Well, no, we see a lot of people asking for pregnancy tests. Now, why are they asking for a pregnancy test? Or why are they coming in for Plan B, which is emergency contraception? So, you know, so I try to gently and yet lovingly ask if they are interested in Russian roulette, because that's exactly what they're doing. You know, when they tell me they use condoms sometimes, again, that's a classic of Russian roulette.
Well, so how do you encourage them to, you know, use more protective sex or try to educate them on AIDS awareness in that sense so that they are more aware of their...
I sit them down and I ask that if at 18, are they truly ready to become a parent?
Right.
You know, because at age 54, I'm here to tell you right now that parenting is the hardest thing I've ever done. And so I like to relate. I don't like, if you were coming to me about drug counseling, I have to be honest with you, I have no experience with that. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, you can't do this, that, or that, because I don't know how it makes you feel, and I wouldn't know what you're feeling when you get high and what that feels like. So, but I can tell you what it feels like to be a parent. And I can tell you what it feels like to be with somebody who's terminally ill. And I can, you know, I try to use life experiences, because I think that's much more believable than someone trying to sit here and preach to you that you should be doing this, that, or the other, but I've never had any experience with it. It doesn't mean that those folks, it doesn't mean that I can't help you quit a drug or alcohol problem, but it means that you need to know where I'm coming from. And then maybe you can educate me so I can turn around and use those things on other people and help other people do that. but I don't have the corner of the market on everything. So if I can learn from my students and my patients and my community members like you, that I don't know what it's like to be a veteran. How can I sit here and tell you what you should or shouldn't feel when I've never done that before?
That's true.
But man, do I want to hear from you. I'd like to interview you. So those kinds of things, because I don't know those experiences. But my God, you've got a wealth of knowledge that I'll never have, that the world won't have, that hasn't done it.
Speaking of emotions, I was thinking about, you know, our audience members and thinking about, you know, the fact that this is a student health center and going back to that and switching back. One of the things that I was worried about is that we have students who have all kind of emotional disorders or, you know, problems, like vets who have post-traumatic stress syndrome. Like a vet like myself, for instance, if I had a relapse of anything and I wanted to talk to somebody and I needed some social or psychological help, what would you suggest to a vet in that state?
I would be more than willing to open up whatever we had to anybody who needs that help. But I would think, and again, you could correct me, but I would think that a veteran would need somebody who understands the nature of the beast better than my psychologist, who none of my three are veterans. Okay. So I would have referrals for you, whether it be a soldier's project or whether it be calling a local vet center and trying to connect with you. I have them as referrals. But I would ask you what you wanted. I would tell you what we'd have. I would tell you our limitations, and I would offer you what we have. But we don't have very much. And when you talk about the emotional and psychological needs of our students as a whole, we are entirely underserved. I can't meet those needs. Okay. And you want to have another hour-long radio show, I can tell you about the problems we're having with finances and cutting services.
Yes.
So when we're looking at the health center no longer being self-sustaining, which it probably will not be by the end of this fiscal year, there's a lot of stuff that I need the students to know about, and I need the students' feedback and help as to how to make it better.
I wanted to get to that because, you know, how do you guys self-sustain if the students aren't coming to you? So what kind of services do you provide specifically so that students know that they can come to you for those services? And
I'll be really honest with you. The health fee is mandated.
Okay.
So if a student never comes to me, it's not going to help me if they start coming. If anything, because I've had to reduce services, it's going to make it more challenging for them because they're going to have a longer wait because I can't get them in as quickly.
Okay.
The problem is the health fee itself. The problem is the health fee that it's only $11 and has only been $11 since 1998, whereas salaries and the cost of medical care have gone up, can we say exponentially? Pretty safely since 1990. Oh my God. So it's frustrating. So I am not meeting the needs of the students, and I'm especially not meeting the mental health needs of the students.
Okay. I find that really difficult, you know, to even contemplate for myself. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know where to even start. Like, I came to you out of an emergency, and people don't know that. I chipped a tooth. I came to you out of an emergency. You immediately helped me. And at the same time, you were kind and made it feel comfortable for.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's
so
important.
Thought you did some psychological, you had a psychological background as well.
Well, I don't, but I have broad shoulders.
So
I really don't. But I do, we do have, to me, what we offer in my 32 years in medical care, I have never worked in a place that has offered so much for so little. So to give you a brief rundown, because I don't see a large percentage of our student population, I get about 5,000 visits a year, but I don't get 5,000 unique visits. In other words, if you come in five times, you're only counted once as a unique visit. I get a lot of repeat customers. So we're really only seeing about 6% of our population in any given semester. But what we have, you can see a physician, you can see nurse practitioners, you can see nurse, you can see psychologists, you can see nutritionists. You'll soon be able to see tobacco cessationists at no cost. There's no copay. If I put something in you, like a flu shot, have you had yours yet? Or if I take something out of you, like a blood test, then there's a cost, but it's my cost. I'm not allowed to make money off of the students. So I'm telling you, I could do a complete physical exam for you and all the blood work for $29.
Well, there's two things I do want to talk about.
Okay.
The vaccine, since you asked about my flu shot. fortunately, I feel like I get sick when I get the flu shot every time. So, but I haven't had my flu shot. But I'd like you to definitely tell us about, I read that just recently.
It went out on the email to all of you guys yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I got them last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I offered them to the nursing students because it's required for their rotations for the first week. Nobody came in, but a lot of them get them at the hospital. So that's why the email went out to all the rest of the students yesterday. And I've been filled. I've been giving them all day long today.
Okay. And I also want to talk about smoking cessation. Tell us more about that.
Well, we're piloting it. And what we've done, we talked to Professor Glass, who is an addictive studies professor. And we want this to work. So we want highly motivated individuals to come. And we posted an essay contest amongst his classes, and we got our essay contestants. Our last one came in about 5 o'clock last night. And we're going to choose 4 or 5 of the essay writers, and we wanted to know why they wanted to quit, if they had a support system, and how many times had they tried in the past. And so it's a curriculum that was written by my intern, a 4-session curriculum. We'll be doing them every 2 weeks. And on the second session, we'll be planning to hand out free nicotine replacement that was funded by a $1,000 grant that we were given by the foundation here on campus.
Wow, that's excellent.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Are you kidding? Part of our lack of success in the past was that we didn't have free cessation replacement or free nicotine replacement. So
yeah.
I know you got to go.
No, we still have a little bit of time. So I just want to know, does the health center actually provide any services out for people inside the Brahma Box that are not students of Pierce College? College? No?
No. We're only funded by student fees. So outside of our Pierce students, no. With the exception of the tobacco cessation, we will be able to offer that to faculty and staff because the interns are not paid out of student health fees. They're not paid at all. And the foundation has told us that we could use the nicotine replacement patches on non-students, meaning staff and faculty. So if we wanted staff or faculty to take, if anybody wanted to participate, we would let them. We're going to open it up to the entire campus next spring, in case you're wondering. So we're piloting it this fall to see how it goes, to iron out the kinks of the curriculum, and then we want to do a campus-wide campaign in February for the spring semester.
I'm definitely interested. Recently, boo on me, I started back smoking cigars, but I quit for 2 years, and then recently it's like, so you really sparked my attention with the smoking cessation.
Cool.
You've been sparking my attention ever since the first week of school. But I'd like to, like I did, I had to ask when I was on campus, I had to ask around the campus where the Student Health Center is. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us how students can find the health center?
Sure. We're on the second floor of the Student Services Building. If you're standing on the mall looking at the building, you go up the right side stairwell. Past international students, we're the first hallway on the right. And the reason we're tucked away is because we spent 16 and a half years in the campus center, which is now under remodeling, but it was a social area. My waiting room was right outside as people would fill out their STD slips.
Wow.
And their friends would walk by. So there was no privacy. So it was very important for us to be private. Anybody who is handicapped can come either up the elevator, or we're the first office on the left if you come in our back door over the bridge from the parking lot.
I didn't know that either.
So, yeah. So you would be able to walk right in and not have to deal with stairs or the elevator.
Okay. Where can students find the house? How can a student contact you or your staff in case of an emergency?
818-710-4270 is the direct line to the health center.
Can you repeat that one
more time? Emergency? Okay. 818-710-4270. 4270, but we are not first responders. If there's an emergency on campus, they need to contact the campus sheriff at 6450 or, 4311?
I think it's 4311.
I think it's 4311. So
if not, double check on kpcradio.com and we'll make sure we put that up for you guys. OK. And I just wanted to thank you, Beth, for coming again. I know I was a little discombobulated today, but it felt like I got a lot of information and I've really felt like I had a good time talking with you.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
All right. And that's Beth Binet, Director of Student Health Center at Pierce College. Stay tuned next week for more Inside the Brahma Box. This is Mario Lawson signing off for kpcradio.com.